If you've been following our daily discussion of the great issues of life and death, you will know that we've been in search of what the Bible says about our prospects of gaining immortality. We discovered early on in our study that an unfortunate mistranslation in the very first chapter of Genesis prevents Bible readers from seeing that both men and animals share a common mortality. Both mankind and the animals were created as living, breathing creatures. Adam and Eve could have gone on to acquire immortality, but they did not. They were victims, so to speak, of the poison needle at the hands of Satan. They were duped into disobedience and came under the death penalty. The result was that at death, both Adam and us, his descendants, are required to return to the dust of the ground. What we learn from the early chapters of Genesis is that we human beings do not have an immortal part of us which survives consciously when we die. So we found throughout the Old Testament that death is likened to an unconscious sleep. Some 100 times in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, death is likened to sleep. Does that mean then that death for us is no different from the death of our pet cats and dogs? Well, of course not, because the Bible also holds out to us the glorious hope that we can come back to life again after death. And the only way for that to happen is by our being woken up from the sleep of death, that is, resurrected to new life. I want to quote once more two statements from leading Bible experts, which I believe can help us correct our often faulty thinking on the issue of who man is and what happens when we die. First, from the well-known Interpreter's Dictionary of the Bible, Volume 1, page 803, this: no Bible text authorizes the statement that the soul is separated from the body at the moment of death. End of quotation. And by soul he meant the real person surviving death consciously. Secondly, from another scholar, I quote, heaven in the Bible is nowhere the destination of the dying. These scholars should provoke us to intense study of our important questions about life and death. Somehow our popular tradition absorbed the idea that our souls can go marching on after our bodies die, and secondly, that our souls go to heaven at death. Neither of these notions can be traced to the Bible. They arise from our failure to see that only resurrection in the future can bring a man back to life. And since only Jesus has been resurrected so far, only he is now in possession of endless life. That is, only Jesus and God, his Father. The rest of the dead are still dead, still asleep in death, waiting to be resurrected. A marvelous insight is provided for us by the inspired words of Daniel chapter 12, verse 2. I quote, many of those who are sleeping in the dust of the ground will awake, some to life in the coming age, and some to shame and contempt, which will exclude them from the coming age. This verse tells you what the dead are doing, sleeping, and where they're doing it, in the ground. I wish this precious Bible verse would become the subject of an intense conversation throughout Atlanta and indeed all over the world where the Bible is studied. It's a verse to put to rest forever the erroneous idea that souls fly off to heaven at death. Death in the Bible really means death. There is death after life, but there's also life after death, and that hope of living again comes only in the resurrection. And the resurrection will not happen until Jesus comes back again. The Bible condemns as a serious mistake the idea that the dead have already been resurrected. Listen to Paul, who was the staunchest defender of the great doctrine of the future resurrection. In 2 Timothy 2:18, Paul referred to two believers who were going astray from the truth. And what was the nature of their damaging error? They were teaching, Paul said, that the resurrection had already happened. And with that wrong idea, they were overthrowing the faith of some. 2 Timothy 2, verses 17 and 18. As we listen to believers today, we can't help thinking that Paul's warnings have been overlooked. Everywhere we seem to hear of so-and-so being alive immediately after death. We may not call it resurrection, but we seem to think that one can gain immortality apart from the future resurrection. But for Paul, that was an impossible idea. It's only by being woken up in the future resurrection that we can come face to face into the presence of Christ. In 1 Corinthians 15, in the space of about 50 verses, Paul says 20 times that the dead are going to be woken up from death. Now, translations have sometimes hidden this fact from you, but why not try a little experiment? Take a Bible and turn to 1 Corinthians 15. This is the finest chapter in the whole of Scripture on life after death. You will see that Paul is adamant that we can live again only when Christ comes back to resurrect us from the state of death. That is Paul's great theme here. So now try this. As you read, please take note of the fact that Paul calls resurrection waking up from the dead. In verse 4, he speaks of Jesus having been put to death, buried, and woken up on the third day. That word wake up is the real meaning of the term raised. Now, it doesn't take the mind of a trained scholar to recognize that people who are woken up in the resurrection must have been sleeping until the resurrection. And that is what we find said about death throughout the Bible. From Moses to Job to David and Solomon and Jesus, man falls asleep in death and he awakes in the resurrection. It's terribly confusing, therefore, to say that the dead are already alive in heaven or hell. It really destroys God's program for granting us immortality only at the future resurrection. It may be pleasant to think that when you die, your soul doesn't die, it just goes to live in another place, but it's an illusion nevertheless. Funeral sermons should express not only our grief at the loss of loved ones, they should announce the great hope of the dead being brought back to life again in the future. But rather than having faith in God's promises about the future, we prefer to think that the dead are already alive. That really makes a nonsense, however, of the whole idea of death and resurrection. It is customary to quote half of one verse in 2 Corinthians 5 and to quote it entirely out of context. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 8, speaks of being absent from this body and at home with Christ. If you will carefully read the surrounding context, you will easily see that Paul is aiming at the resurrection here. That is when he hopes to be at home with Jesus. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 14. This is his one hope. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 14 says that God is going to resurrect the Christians or wake them up just as he resurrected or woke up Jesus. I noticed in my German Bible that the word is erwecken, which simply means to wake up from death. In fact, one of the German words for resurrection is Auferweckung, a waking up. So you see, in 2 Corinthians 5, Paul is describing the wonderful new body we're going to put on over our present bodies. We're going to be invested with a new body, a body that can never die or decay. But that's going to happen when Jesus returns to this earth. It's not going to happen the moment you die. No one but Christ has yet been resurrected to immortality, and mercifully, no one yet is being tormented in hellfire. The dead are really dead. Reread the Bible with this scheme in mind, and much of it will become like a new book for you. Above all, meditate on Daniel 12, verse 2, which tells us what the dead are doing, sleeping, and where they're doing it, in the ground or the grave. Some have wondered about the witch of Endor in 1 Samuel 28. Did she really bring the dead Samuel back to life? Saul in that chapter was in great trouble because, as verse 6 says, God had refused to answer his prayer for information about how to deal with his Philistine enemies. So Saul did a very unwise thing. He sought out a woman with a familiar spirit, a woman, that is, who could use a demon as a servant to do her will, what we would now call a medium. King Saul then disguised himself and went under cover of darkness to visit the witch of Endor, who lived some 50 miles from where Samuel was buried. Saul then said to the medium, "Use your occult powers to bring up for me the person I name." The woman's immediate reaction was, "You know how dangerous it is for me to do such a thing. King Saul has expelled all the mediums from the land." Saul then promised her most deceitfully, "You will not be punished for using your occult powers." I note that this was exactly the same lie that the devil used to deceive Adam and Eve. "You will not die," said the devil, "even if you disobey what God says." The woman then saw a god coming up out of the ground. She informed Saul that the old man, wrapped in a robe, was the dead Samuel, now manifested as alive. There's nothing in this story which proves that this was a resurrection of the real Samuel. A demon could have impersonated Samuel to give the impression that the dead are really living. The Bible's own comment on this event is most significant. 1 Chronicles 10, verse 13 tells us that Saul died because of his unfaithfulness for consulting a medium and seeking guidance and not seeking guidance from God. So God killed him and turned the kingdom over to David. The story should be an ample warning to any who think that they can make contact with the dead. To do so is to meddle with the demon world, which will, by the way, present itself as benevolent and helpful. It's a dangerous practice to think that the dead can be invoked in any way. The popular idea of surviving souls encourages the very thing the Bible forbids. Once we learn that the dead are dead and cannot help us in any way, we will have no temptation to call on the power of supposed saints, even Mary, who is also dead, awaiting the resurrection in the future. If you've been caught in teachings which encourage contact with the dead, it will be wise to distance yourself from them immediately. Being properly informed from the Bible about what death and the afterlife really mean will protect you from the dangerous influence of the demon world. Don't forget that Satan is camouflaged as an angel of light. You'll find that in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. His lies are most attractive. It's a pleasant fiction to think that the dead are already alive in heaven. But I remind you of the clear words of the leading Bible scholar we quoted earlier. Heaven in the Bible is nowhere the destination of the dying. Our destiny in the future is something much more real and exciting. If you will stay tuned to our daily broadcasts, we would like to point to Jesus' own teaching about our future. For the moment, it will be useful to ponder his wonderful saying to us, "Blessed are the meek, for they are going to inherit the earth." Matthew 5, verse 5. It may be that some of this material we've been presenting is new to you. Write to us or contact us by phone for some free literature for your personal study. Meanwhile, join us again tomorrow as we continue to cast our searchlight on the great issues of life and death in the Bible.